Send from my iPhone.
Hi, I'm connected to the server.
Disconnected from server. I'll be right back.
Is there a mumble client for iPhone?
Channel Evan. I can't hear anything. Channel Evan. It all comes in pulses, like every 2 seconds.
Can Evan not find the unmute button?
Here, I'm not muted. Hello. Hi. I can see it here. Damn it. It's just coming weird little pulses of stream.
Are you on a computer, Evan, or a phone?
I'm on a computer.
I'm not sure he's passed the quality test yet, has he?
Try turning the audio quality to high.
You've got to turn it off completely and Frank Bruno-style laugh.
Maybe the secret to his massive software output.
So let's do this thing.
Where's bloody David, though?
Can you not hear me?
Yeah, yeah. Good. Say something, yeah.
You can hear me?
Yeah, yeah, we can, yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
Excellent, finally.
Well, no, that was the first thing I've heard from you, when I said, where's David?
No, I did say hello, but then everybody seems to ignore me.
Well, there's no change there. Right, okay.
Bastards.
So, are we on tape? Are we recording?
I don't know. I've got no idea. I'm just going to try and find out now.
Okay.
I remember one incident on Skype where we had to do the whole thing again halfway through because we realised that it wasn't recording.
Can you just shut up for a moment, please?
Sorry.
while I test this audio, yeah?
The sound of silence.
Shut up! Fuck's sake.
Sorry.
It's recording now, yeah.
What, so we're all on one channel?
You're all on one channel, I'm on another. Not ideal, but... Right, go on then.
Right, sorry. after a slight delay with some technology, we're very proud and pleased to welcome Evan Padrimo to the show. Welcome, Evan.
Hi, I'm really glad to be on. I'm very excited. It's been a little bit of technical difficulties for us to get to the recording point, but now that we're here, man, it was worth the wait.
Good.
Well, it's part of the guest experience to join in with the hour.
It's part of the initiation, yeah.
Well, it's been definitely good. So I have about 6 minutes left for us to actually do any sort of...
let's do the quick fly around, Andy.
Right, okay, yeah.
Do you want me to say who I am or what I do? Or yeah, please, is it just expected that everyone's going to know?
Yeah, please introduce yourself, Evan, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, my name's Evan Padrimo. And I'm the original creator of Identica, and original writer of the StatusNet software, and the current writer of Pump.io.
Sorry, hold on. Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. Pump.io.
Sure. Pump.io.
I thought it was pump.io.
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 No, it's got to be pump.io.
Why do you have to say the dot? You don't say the dot.
Well, I thought that's how you were saying it. Come on, man.
Pump.io sounds funny.
I wrote a song this morning called pump.io.
I mean, you can say the dot if you want to. You can say the dot if you want to, but I mean, I think it sounds... Pump.io sounds like pump/o, like input/output, so it sounds kind of like, you know, and that's one of the things that computers do, so it makes it sound like a computer thing.
Are you winding me up? I thought you were calling it pump.io.
No.
Why do you think I did the song called pump.io? Pump.io would have fitted better.
I didn't even know there was a song called pump.io.
Well, there wasn't.
There's a song about it?
Yeah.
I'll change the name to fit the song if that's really important.
It would have been easier to call it Pump.io.
Just do another take.
Yeah.
How long will it take you?
It's not that easy. I mean, it'll probably take a couple of hours, isn't it? Anyway, never mind. Sorry, carry on. Carry on, Evan. I'll cut that bit out.
Okay, but what's this song? I haven't seen anything about this song.
It's a top secret David has covered Elvis Costello's Pump It Up and reworded it to fit the new federated network, social network.
Are you fucking kidding me? That's great. That's fantastic. Oh, hey, there it is. Wow. Yeah, that sounds... So, Pump.io. Yeah, that would work a lot better than Pump.io.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh my god. Look at this. It's the Pump.io song. I'll call it Pump.io. I started playing it. This is amazing. And you even did the picture. The nose picture.
I've been on Identica, Friendica, and Facebook, Google Plus, and StatusNet, thinking about this and that. Haven't said that's that. I don't want to Twitter twat. Federate a little bit or federate a lot. Pump.io, it's what you tend to really crave, yeah. Pump.io, pump your life in and out of your friends. Down in the GitHub, hellbent or heaven sent, pull down the latest version, join in the conversation. There's nothing underhand that heaven wouldn't understand. Pump.io, it's what your tents really crave, yeah. Pump.io, pump your life in and out of your friends. Pump.io, it's what your tents really crave, yeah. Pump.io, pump your life in and out of your friends. I've been on Identica, Friendica, and Facebook, Google Plus, and StatusNet, thinking about this and that. Heaven said that's that. I don't wanna Twitter twat. Federate a little bit or federate a lot. Pump.io, it's what your tents really crave, yeah. Pump.io, pump your life in and out of your friends. Pump.io, it's what your friends really crave, yeah. Pump.io, pump your life in and out of your friends. Pump.io, pump your life in and out of your friends. Pump.io, it's what your tents really crave, yeah. Pump.io, pump your life in and out of your friends.
Wow, that's incredible. Wow. So
you have to have this playing automatically on the Pump.io website.
Yeah.
Like playing in the background when you
starting kind automatically.
In the foreground, surely.
Oh yeah, of course. Please set your speakers on high. This song was intended to be played loud. Yes, absolutely. So wow, that's fantastic. I had no idea. I haven't heard this. When did this? Did you just post this today?
Yeah, just about an hour ago.
Really? Oh yeah, while I was like fucking around with Mumble, pardon me.
Especially for this show.
Hey, we're in like adult level speech, right?
Yeah.
Can we? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, subject to the UK censorship. Yes.
Yeah.
Luke turned 21 last week, didn't he? I think.
Yeah. So. Is my harsh speech going to be filtered as it goes across the Atlantic?
We have beeped some speech out before, haven't we, I think?
What, for only for Gordon?
Yeah. I called Gordon a or something and I beeped it out.
Oh, don't, please, no, please, please.
It was wasn't it? Yeah. Was abusing everyone, wasn't he?
Oh, Richard,
sorry.
We had to
beep him out, didn't we?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well,
foul mouth.
I'll try and keep it to a minimum, because I don't want to...
Try and be professional, Evan, yeah.
Yeah.
So, Evan, I guess it would be nice for you to appear on a podcast with three intelligent guys who understand the word federation.
It is actually a pretty amazing thing. So, I mean, doing podcasts, especially for the, like, general podcast kind of population... It tends to be a lot of, like, you know, a lot of crap and a lot of re-explaining the same concepts over and over to people. And it's nice when people kind of get how it works and understand the limitations and are familiar with the software. So, yes, yeah. That's very good.
I guess It must get kind of boring explaining it repeatedly when you do it all day as well.
You know, I mean, and it's also like people are kind of looking for a Stallman-esque screed, you know, and that's just not my style. So, like, you know, they're looking for me to say, like, oh, I want to destroy all social software and I want to punish everybody who ever wrote software ever. And that's just not the way I think about what I'm doing or, you know, what we're doing with the Federated Social Web. So it's a little hard to give the kind of sound bites that people want to hear. So, you know, people will be like, what do you think about Twitter dropping hashtag support for their, you know, iPhone extra app? And I'm like, I don't care. That is nothing to me. Like, I'm going to, like, sit down and write tens of thousands of lines of code because I'm angry about, you know, some feature being dropped from, like, one of Twitter's clients. That's ridiculous. Like, nobody would do that. I think that people get the motivations really mixed up, and that's the most difficult thing with those kind of podcasts. So yes, it's really nice. But I don't know if you guys saw like the LWN article. That one was really good. The interview with Nate Willis, just really good, really accurate. Nate has been an Identica user since very early on, so he knows how it works, and he really nailed it. So that was a really great article to read. And then the one that was just in opensource.com was actually really good too. So, I mean, it was mostly me. So, you know, of course it's going to be good. But
No, it's only a little dig at our friend Dick Turpin there, Beta Cannon.
Yeah, you know,
he prefers compatible software or compatible systems. But till the day I die, I don't think he'll get it.
Yeah, you know, he's real funny, but oh my god, when he was like, did you see the post he did where he's like, I go to my Identica account and I go to the inbox and it's completely different than my my Microcast account. And I was like, that's because you're following different people, you know. At first I was like, oh, there's some terrible bug going on, because it's entirely possible that there's a terrible bug going on. But no, it was just that he did not quite get that they were different servers, different accounts, different things. So, and I'm sure, like, when email first started, there were lots of people who were like, you know, I connect my email account, it's completely different at work and at home. So he's a difficult audience to work for, but it also does make it fun too.
I think he's representative of quite a few normal users who aren't overly techie or savvy, and they just want it to work, don't they?
Well, yeah, and the whole I don't like change kind of thing as well, which you see a pushback with from everything.
Well, you just made me think, actually. It's a bit like, you know, chatting to my mother, isn't it? Or emailing with my mother online, you know, and trying to explain to her that she has to open up the Firefox browser in order to log into her Gmail.
Right.
She doesn't understand what a browser is.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, I mean, you get that kind of, like, conceptual stuff that, like, and it's really hard working backwards, you know. It's really hard working backwards from, like, I think of that as the inbox, the message inbox for everyone you follow. And my understanding of social software is that that's kind of, there's a page like that on pretty much every piece of social software that exists, right? But, you know, for a lot of people, it's like, well, you know, what is this thing and what does it do? And so that's kind of interesting too. I mean, it's hard sometimes to get that not everyone understands it. That's been a real motivator for Pop.io, and one of the things that I really am interested in doing is I think that when Google Plus started, it really, maybe just because Google has that good hacker reputation, they managed to get a lot of people who weren't already participating in social software in the open source kind of hackery community onto it. and that attracted a lot of people from Identica, right? And that was a really tough time, and it was also a really tough time for me. My company was going into a tailspin, and I was laying off everybody, and I had no system administrators, and you know, I was a single person dealing with what was now a like 30 server array that used to have like 3 people working on it, and it was now just me. And so we had all kinds of reliability problems, and so we lost a lot of people to Google Plus, and I think that we're just slowly starting to get some of them back. Some of them could stay. That's fine. You know, happy to leave some of them there. But I think it's going to be an interesting thing as Pump.io kind of goes through its next like 6 to 8 weeks of improvements, how many people we can pull back from Google Plus.
So would you say that sort of the layout and such of Pump.io has been sort of inspired by Google Plus? I mean, I've noticed that it does images and all of that kind of thing a lot better than Google Plus does, and is more of a sort of less of a stream concept and more like a stream like Facebook or Google Plus has.
There are some things in there that are definitely borrowed from Google Plus. No, let me not say they're borrowed from Google Plus. They're borrowed from Diaspora via Google Plus.
Yeah.
So things like the circle or aspect style of security. So being able to set up, you know, your friends, your family, your acquaintances, and share certain things with certain people. We never got that right with StatusNet, right? Like we never quite got the idea that you would have certain kinds of people you'd share certain kinds of things with. We had more of the Twitter style of, you know, either your stuff is public or private, but never both. And so we mixed a whole bunch of concepts together with privacy in StatusNet, and we're just kind of getting that right, I think, with Pump.io. I think it's going to take another couple of tweaks. I think that managing the defaults and stuff is going to be important. Like right now, it always defaults to your followers, and you have to kind of switch it around. It would be nice to have be able to change the defaults to default public or default to a particular list or multiple lists. But I think that's going to come with time. So that's one of the big things. The other thing is that, you know, if you look at like the StatusNet 1.0 interface, there is so much on there, it's not even funny, right? Like there's a menu down the left. There's a whole bunch of shit on the right. There's stuff going on in the middle. There's all kinds of buttons and knobs and levers, right? And I actually was looking at things like Tumblr and Postgres, which really concentrate on a very simple interface without a lot going on. And I like that kind of stuff a lot better. So that's kind of why Pump.io has so little going on with it. So
yeah, I think it's certainly succeeded in being quite a clear interface overall, especially on the sort of home timeline.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, another thing is that, and I know that this has been really complicated for people, and I think that as we get more clients working, it's going to be less confusing. But I really want the web interface to be your kind of, maybe not your last resort interface, but you know, maybe a not really the primary way that you interact with the software, right? You know, use a desktop client or use another web client, right? Like let somebody who's better at it develop that, right? I'm waiting for someone to do like a Hootsuite plugin or some of the other stuff that lets you, like, if you want to do a certain kind of interface, you can. And that's kind of the goal here. So
I think you have to accept still that the web interfaces you create, it's still going to be the first one that people see
who
comes to the website. So, I mean, it has to sort of show off the features well and be simple so that people can understand the sort of concepts. And then they tend to move on to the clients.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that's going to be kind of the next step. And as people kind of do that and we get more clients, and you know, I'm looking forward to having the first web-based client because you know, I think that's going to be really interesting. And it's the kind of thing that really shows a difference between Pump.io and some of the centralized social networks. Like if you set up a web-based client for Twitter will shut down your account, right? They'll turn off your API key. They won't let you do it. Whereas, you know, that's something I really want people to do with Pump.io. And I think there's going to be some really interesting stuff that we can do there too. I'm really interested to write more applications.
Death, war, repentance!
We have some pretty compelling stuff out there right now. I think Open Farm Game, I would put that up against any farm-based social game as really one of the best out there. So, nothing. You guys aren't going to give me any cream about that. So, I think that apps like Open Farm Game, you know, show that we can do kind of richer social applications outside of the web UI.
Open Farm Game is the only farm game I've played, and all my tomatoes died.
Oh no! That's too bad. Well, I really want to be able to set up a system where you can send me a Bitcoin and I give you some more, like, more tomato seeds, right? I mean, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
But it's funny. They're like, Macno set up. He like started scripting it, and he has like a giant farm with like thousands of plots. Like, and he automatically waters all his stuff. So he's a very he got around some of the bullshit that you have to do for. So yeah, Open Farm Games, interesting. I'm interested to see how much more we get out of it. But the somebody's breathing really hard on the.
That's Andy, I think.
Really?
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
He always does that. This is Darth Vader mask.
Sorry.
You should just be thankful we haven't got video on and see him in his stockings and suspenders.
No, sorry, I had to... sorry, Devin. Please go on.
Oh, that's okay. So, I mean, I think one of the things that kind of amazes me is how resilient the Identica and greater... kind of federated community has been, right? Like, if you look at, like, do you remember when Dig changed their interface a couple years ago? And pretty much everybody left. I'll tell you right now, I don't even remember what the big difference was between, like, Dig before and Dig after. I just know that, like, you know, they changed it, everybody got pissed off and ran away, right? And, yeah. Like, Identica users have stuck with Identica through thick and thin. It changes from one thing to the other. And, you know, when we did the change from like 0.9 to 1.0, which is a pretty significant UI change, through some pretty patchy times of reliability from, you know, from this change from StatusNet to PubBio. And people have been actually pretty great about it. At this point, it's mostly the masochists who are left, so that's one thing. But it's also like a really amazing thing that people kind of stick with it. So now I'm wondering, like, what's it going to take to really pull off my cakes, right? Like, everybody go, get off my network. So I can't think, like, anything is going to kill this social network. Like, it's really would take a miracle at this point.
Well, especially when people can just federate as well, because then it's a different network, but on the same network. I mean, the same people are still talking to each other, just in a different way.
Yeah, and I think that's really the case. You know, it's the people that make the social network, and not really the software that does it. So I think as long as people can communicate, that's the most important part. It's been a super important community for me. And this last 5 years of the Identica community has been really life-changing. You know, I see it as a, you know, important part of who I am to keep this community going. It's definitely a love-hate relationship for me, though, sometimes. Like, it's sometimes I just cannot stand having a single person ask me for anything. Like, I don't want to talk to anybody on Identica at all. And then other times it's like, whatever it takes. Like, every single thing I can do to make it better is great. So, and that varies day by day, too. But
I think we're all a bit like that, yeah. But,
yeah.
Bevan, let's be frank. There is a hard, residual hardcore of people who don't like the pump interface. They don't like the over 140 characters, and they're perfectly content on Quitter or Microfragdev. So there's a bit of fragmentation there, and I think all three of us have had to get Quitter accounts just to follow some of our old former friends who are now on a different network with no bridge between them. Do you regret not putting a Identica to Pump bridge in on from day one, or what was the reason for that?
First of all, I'm only one person, right? Like, I can't write all that kind of software, like, just as myself. So my hope is that we're going to develop that kind of functionality together as it's needed.
It's me, sorry. Delivery.
Go ahead and get it. We'll wait. We'll wait. The timing on the Identica switchover, this recent Identica switchover, is really driven by money. Like, that's primarily the main thing that really did it, which is that I could not possibly keep paying for the network that we needed to support the LAMP stack StatusNet based Identica. It was simply too much. And the fact that Pump.io was like marginally usable, just usable enough that it could actually support the functionality we needed, was like, that was where I had to justify switching over. I think that having a StatusNet to Pump bridge would be great. I think it's something that's definitely possible. I think the way that it's going to work is that for StatusNet 1.2, or actually what will be GNU Social 1.2, we'll have a plugin that supports the Pump.io protocol. And so, you know, StatusNet sites will be able to talk to Pump.io sites, you know, internally rather than through a bridge.
Well, because I think the eventual goal of the sort of federated social media should be that it doesn't necessarily matter what software you're using as long as you can all talk to each other, and then it doesn't so much matter.
I have mixed feelings about that. Not because I want everybody to use my software, like, but because I think when we think like that, we tend to end up with a lot of half-built software, developer communities and user communities that are split across those different software communities. And that means that, you know, none of them really get the escape velocity. They never really kind of build up that critical mass to start self-supporting, right? So, I mean, we're split up, like on Federated Social Web stuff, we're split up between Diaspora, Friendica, StatusNet, now Pump.io, Buddy Cloud actually is doing pretty nicely, and then a long tail of like dead or dying applications. Tent.io is another one that's out there. I haven't been keeping an eye on them. I have no idea what's going on with those guys, but they made a bit of a splash last fall. But, you know, when we split stuff up like that, it really keeps us from getting a critical mass. As much as I like the fact that we can have multiple implementations that interoperate, and that's great, at the same time, I'm like, it is kind of a pain that we...
Fragmentation of development effort.
Yeah, it's fragmentation of developer effort, right? And it comes down to stuff that I think isn't that important, right? Like, I don't think PHP versus Node.js versus Ruby versus this versus that is like that big a deal, right? What's important is giving the features that people need and doing it like in a way that's performant and so like
a ridiculous amount of money to run.
Exactly. You know, I think it's a tricky kind of place to be, but it's interesting too. I mean, I think that there is a potential for us to like split up the very tiny Federated Social Web market into lots of little user communities, and nobody really kind of takes off, and that might be a really big problem. Whereas, you know, if that community was united behind one piece of software, you know, they could get a lot going. But it is also kind of the nature of open sourcey, open webby kind of people that they all want to write their own damn software. So, you know, maybe that's just the way it's going to be. You know, a couple years ago when Diaspora started, I was just like, oh my God, I can't believe these guys are starting a new social network. Like, we've been working on this for a while. You know, when they started that, it was like, okay, let's at least be talking to each other so we know what's going on. And we've been doing that somewhat through the W3C, which has been great. And we've got a big event that's happening in August in San Francisco to kind of, you know, present papers and do that kind of thing. But I definitely have been kind of changing my mind about what my responsibilities are for Friendica, say. You know, it's fine if you want to start your own software and go and do it and do this stuff.
you can't necessarily support it.
It's not necessarily like if Frendica does well, Pop.io does well. I'm not sure that's the case, right? Like, if we can get the kind of interoperability that Frendica users can talk to Pop.io users very seamlessly and it drives more users for everybody, then maybe it's good. If it's like, don't use Frendica, use Pop.io, or don't use Pop.io, use Frendica. Or what I think happens mostly with people is that they go, hey, you know, there's five different programs out there. There's, you know, all these different networks. I don't know which one to join, so I'm not going to join any of them. You know, I'm going to wait until
one emerges victorious.
Exactly. And I think that's what happens with a lot of these services. So we've been lucky with Identica. I think with one of the factors that worked out well with Identica was that some of the organizations like Wikimedia Foundation, Linux Foundation, EFF, Creative Commons, right? They wanted to have a presence on something that was more in alignment with their philosophical beliefs than Twitter. So they stayed on Identica, and that kind of kept things going. But I think those kinds of users tend to really think in terms of services rather than the network. So, but it has been good having those kind of high level or at least high visibility organizations participating. So, you know, we'll see how long that goes. I was really happy that the FSF set up their own StatusNet site last year. I felt a little bad leaving them behind when we switched over to Pop.io, but I am pretty glad that they've done it, and I hope we see more organizations do that. You know.
So what do you think the future for StatusNet is? I mean, some people have certainly expressed interest in continuing to run it with Twitter and such, but do you think people are going to fork it, keep working on it? Or?
So the official future, which we haven't done like a big announcement about yet, but is kind of like in the pipeline, is that StatusNet becomes GNU Social and it becomes an official FSF project. There's one guy, Michael Nordfeldt, who is paid by the Swedish Pirate Party to work on the software. Right. So he is like full-time working on the software, and he's going to be the maintainer for the FSF to maintain the software, right? So I think that it has at least reasonable future for it, for people who want to maintain it. I think the transition has been hard, and as many times as I say, like, listen, don't worry, StatusNet is going to survive, a lot of people have been missing that message altogether, right, and kind of going past it. So over the last week, we had a really serious problem. We had a security bug that came up, not a world shaker, but a pretty good one, and the guy who identified the bug didn't contact me. Right. His thought was like, well, Evan's the maintainer of StatusNet, but now he's concentrating on Pop.io, so I'm not going to contact him at all. So he never sent me anything. He just went on to the IRC channel and started asking people like, what should I do with the security bug? None of the people on the IRC channel had done a security release before, a security alert before. None of them were really software maintainers. And so they went in this very different direction than what you're supposed to do with a security bug, which is fix it and release as soon as possible. So their idea was like, let's keep this as secret as possible for as long as we can and contact people directly. You know, weirdly enough, it was reported like a week and a half before I heard of this bug, right? Finally, someone said like, oh, let's check with Evan because he's running StatusNet too and he'll probably want to fix this stuff. And I was like, how long have we known about this? Like, what's the problem? And, you know, we had a patch release out within about 4 hours, but it was still like a great big, like,
failure in communication, I guess.
It was a failure in communication. And it was mostly a failure in communication because nobody knew who was manning the boat, right? Like, nobody knew who was in charge. I think that was a big mistake. So it's really driven me to say, like, let's get this GNU Social thing launched so we have one place that is the real place that things go.
Yeah.
that's kind of where it is. I've been kind of waiting on the Identica thing to happen and the big Identica switchover to happen before we did that. And now that it's done, I think it's really time to launch that for StatusNet. That said, there's been lots of people who are like starting to distribute patches and stuff. And it's like, wow, we really need to get this developer community organized so the software can go forward.
When you talk about the business model of StatusNet, you had commercial entities like Motorola who had a self-hosted StatusNet instance behind a corporate firewall, and you're offering consultancy services. How do you see the business model for Pump going forward? We worry about your holidays, and do we need to send you food parcels? Or
you don't have to send me food parcels. That's definitely not happening.
Okay.
So here's the basics on what I'm doing right now. So I have paying customers right now who are implementing Pump.io in their own systems, right? Really, like, one of the big usages for Pump.io is for people who want a headless social server that will do the kind of routing that they need for, you know, social networky stuff. So, you know, a good example, one of the people I'm working with, they have a 3D modeling application in the browser, and they want to support workflow activity streams. Evan uploaded a new model, Luke liked this model, Andy commented on the model, that kind of thing. They are really, really smart about 3D modeling, and they don't want to have to mess around with basically the kind of software that people have written hundreds of times before. So they're using Pump.io to do all their activity stream stuff, and it saved them a lot of time and effort, right? They're not at all interested in being part of a federated social network, right? What they want is a social server, this kind of headless social server. And that's fine with me.
If you want a headless social server, just go and ask Dick Turpin. I mean, he's your man, isn't he?
Oh, nice. That was good.
Sorry.
Yeah, nailed it. That was awesome. Yeah, so people who want this that kind of headless social server, great. So that's kind of what I'm doing right now. I also think one of the things I had that killed me with StatusNet, you know, just like heartbreaking, was like people who would come to me and they'd be like, I've got this like social software. We're doing this like social startup. We want to do federated stuff, but we don't want to like reshare our code afterwards, right? So can you give us an exception on the AGPL? Because StatusNet is under AGPL v3, so very strong copyleft. And we had to say, no, we can't, because we had so many developers who had contributed. We hadn't taken copyright assignment. So as a company, we could exempt people from the AGPL with a more liberal license. So I'm using Apache for Pump.io. It means that those companies that want to set up, you know, some software that is primarily social using Pump.io and let it federate, they can. You know, and I'm pretty happy about that situation. I mean, it's definitely like outside some of the ideas I had a few years ago about making sure that everyone has free software for everything. At this point, I'm starting to feel like at being able to be part of a federated system is more important than every single person using free software, you know, on the client and server for everything, right? Like, I want to be able to enable folks to make their own decisions about what kind of software they're using. That's another source of revenue. A third one is that I'd like to start selling hardware probably by the end of the year. So a box that you can buy, either Raspberry Pi or BeagleBone based. Right now it's looking like BeagleBone.
What about Tornado? Or Tornado Butt Plug, as Andy calls it.
The Tornado Butt Plug?
That's what Andy calls it. It's a Tornado. It's a plug computer. I've got one. That's why I'm interested. You know, I'd like it on my Tornado Butt Plug.
That is really interesting. I think that there is a class of users. They buy a Raspberry Pi. They buy a BeagleBone. They buy a plug computer, NSLUG or something like that, right? They have a small home server. We have a lot of people who are running on netbooks, like, stuck under their beds, right?
James Robertson has his in the loft.
But, you know, and they make actually pretty decent servers, but you have to know how to set them up. My experience with the plug computers has been that they're hard to source. Like, I've had a hard time getting a plug computer for myself, much less getting, like, 100 or 1,000 to sell. So I haven't been crazy about that plug computer thing. I am pretty excited about the Raspberry Pi format. You know, it's a small computer. If you can just run a power cable to your plug and run a cable into your router, I think we can get you up and running with a Pump.io site.
Raspberry Pis are already very popular as well and easy right. to get hold of. I mean, lots of people already have one as well.
Hasn't J-Rob got it working on a Pi?
Yeah, J-Rob's running one on a Pi. Saz is running one on a Pi. So there are a few people who are running them on Pis right now, and which I think is pretty great. There are some things that you have to do because Pi has that funny floating point support. So like some of the packages you have to rebuild and things like that. But mostly it seems pretty good. I think having something that's like at $100, what would that be, like £70? You know, it's not something that you buy at the checkout counter, but it's something that's not an excessive decision to make. You've got a family social network server that's in your house that you can, you know, put your kids on, that put grandma on.
Evan, this is just totally off the top of my head just now, but have you heard about the Ouya, the indie open games console that's recently been developed?
I do know about the Ouya, and I think it's actually pretty interesting. Did they actually ship yet?
Yeah, they shipped, yeah. There was a big hoo-ha because the people who backed it on Kickstarter didn't get their consoles until after people who bought it from Amazon and things like that, but, you know, it shipped.
Whoops.
Yeah, whoops. I just wonder because, you know, a lot of people are into games and stuff, and if it's on a gaming console already, then it's just an easy way to access it, isn't it? Whereas, you know, your average person isn't going to buy a Raspberry Pi, are they? Your average person is going to buy a plug computer.
So the idea that I've got here is to have a little appliance based on Raspberry Pi, but nobody needs to know it's Raspberry Pi, or there might be a Raspberry Pi logo somewhere, but it says, you know, pump.io up on the top, and it's got the logo, and then you plug it in, and it does the UPnP configuration of your router, and it does a Dyn DNS to set up its DNS, and it's got a pre-installed cert. It is just ready to go right out of the box, literally. Just as long as you like know the URL to connect to, it's there. And I think that it can work pretty nicely there. I do want to support as many home devices. I also want to get more of the platform as a service things like Heroku and OpenShift, Nojitsu. What's the VMware one? Cloud
Foundry, is it?
That's it, Cloud Foundry. So get more of those supported, AppFog. A lot of them have like free levels of service, like freemium levels of service at like, you know, you get a 256 meg slice for free, and they would be fantastic for running a pump, like running a personal pump or even a family style pump with a few people. And I think that could be a great thing too. As far as the hardware is concerned, people understand paying for hardware. They understand that you have to pay to get this thing. So it might be a place where I could make some money, which would be good for me.
It's a way to spread it, isn't it, in a realistic way? Because like you say, people do understand buying hardware. People do understand plugging in hardware, switching it on and connecting. They don't understand installing software generally, do they?
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And it's getting tougher every day. Another thing that I think is that makes Pump.io kind of competitive, I think that there's an equivalent UK law, but for the US, there's a law called COPPA, C-O-P-P-A, which is Child's Online Privacy Protection Act. And it says that companies like Facebook have to go through a lot of hoops to get parental permission in order to give accounts to children, so kids under 13. So when you go to sign up for Facebook, you have to click this little box that says, I assert that I'm over 13, etc. And if they find that you're under 13, they'll kill your account. The idea being that their business model, which is based on collecting as much private information as they possibly can about you and then selling it to marketers, is unethical to do to children, which kind of begs the question is like, why is it okay to do this to people over 13, but not okay to do it to people under 13? But whatever, right? They're not allowed to do it to kids under 13. And so I think that that's a like huge untapped market, right? Like a huge group of people who are kind of cut out of current social networks, right? And lots of kids find ways to get around this and everything. I've got two kids. I've got a son who's 5 and a daughter who's 7. And they both know how to use an Android tablet. They both are really good at it. And giving them a way to like share pictures with their grandparents or send a note to mom and dad, I think could be really cool. It's going to take some fine tuning of what the how the Pop.io interface works, parental controls on, so having a parent decide who you can follow or who can follow you, that kind of thing. But I think it could be really great. And none of the, you know, COPPA laws apply if you're setting up a server for your own kid.
Yeah, especially clearly, as Raspberry Pis are sort of aimed at getting children into computers and getting them interested.
Exactly. So I think it could be, I think it'd be really great. I'm not saying this in terms of like, I want to make a lot of money off kids. I'm saying that I think that it will get people thinking about having their own software or having their own servers because they want to have that control over their kids' experience. And it's also a very natural federated kind of thing, right? Like most families are naturally federated. When two people have a child, unless you're in certain kinds of families, they usually come from different families. Unless there's a lot of inbreeding going on, you're bringing together families, and those families have families, and so on and so on. Addressing federation at the level of the household could be like really powerful. Grandma has a pump at her house, we've got a pump at our house, and they talk to each other, and we share photos, and we share videos, and we send notes across that boundary. It could work pretty nicely. But the big thing is having software and having hardware that lets grandma run a pump at all. The business model right now is like, take money any way I can and keep that federation thing going as best as possible. I try not to whine about it too much. And the fact that, you know, I'm not spending thousands of dollars every month just keeping Identica going is a big thing too. Business is going okay right now. I'd like to be getting more customers for the Pump.io, but I'm pretty happy with where things are right now.
Are a bunch of your current Pump.io customers, are they people who you were previously StatusNet instances for, or are they a new crowd?
No, actually not. What's kind of funny is that in the fall of 2011, we kind of hit a wall with the company. My investors wanted to shut down the company, and I said, you know, I want to keep doing this. So I laid off all the employees for StatusNet Inc. It looked like we were going to wind it down, and I was just going to buy all the assets of the company for nothing. And so one of the things that we did was we fired all our customers. So all the customers at that time told them, like, we're canceling your contracts and we're going to give you back anything that's left over. Most of them were ending at the end of the year anyway. So it wasn't a huge amount of money that we had to deal with. It was really like we're clearing the deck. The beginning of 2012, there were no paying customers for StatusNet. And that has meant that, like, it's a whole new set of people who are coming to look at Pump.io. And I'm actually pretty okay with that, right? Like, I think that having a new set of people look at this with a fresh set of eyes is really great. There are a lot of things about StatusNet that made it kind of a pain to explain to people. A lot of people, like, the way they thought of StatusNet was the open source Twitter, right? That's what it is. So it's a way to do microblogging. As useful as that is,
it's limited in scope, isn't it?
Exactly. But people really had focused on this 140-character message thing, and they didn't see much more status. So we had to explain a lot that it can do this and can do that. It can do applications. So I'm actually pretty happy to be leaving that StatusNet name and concept behind. I think that, say, with GNU Social, the idea has always been to have a full-featured social network. So I think that's going to be powerful, and the perception there is that. But there are a lot of people that I've talked to about Pump.io who don't really see the connection back to StatusNet, or they see it as lessons learned, this is a new implementation. I think that for the Identica community and for the greater StatusNet federated community, they understand that, and so it feels like it's a very close connection between them. But for a lot of the people who are coming to me for commercial use, they're like, yeah, this Pump.io looks great.
Okay, I've got a question. I didn't follow the development commits on StatusNet, but I have been following it a little bit more on Pump because I was involved at an earlier stage. It seems to me that you've got more contributions, say, more of an active developer community on the Pump than maybe in the first 3 months of StatusNet. Is that fair, or is it just the fact it's new and exciting for people to try?
I think you're absolutely correct. I am really happy about that. Like, that's one of the things that I think is going to be really strong with this version. Part of it is that it's just me who's working inside the company. I can't do it myself. I need to have more people contributing, and there are people contributing a lot. It may also be, I'm not sure if it's GitHub yet, but the fact that Pump.io is on GitHub rather than Gitorious, I feel like we're getting more attention because of that. And I hate saying that because I like having multiple services out there, but it does have that network effect on GitHub, which is good. The other thing that's really happened with Pump.io is because the API is different from the Twitter API. So with StatusNet, initially, the first API we did was the Twitter clone API, right? We just cloned the API almost exactly. There were a couple of things that were different. We had some additions on top of it. And that was great for getting kind of casual support from big name social software, right? So like TweetDeck supported StatusNet, but they supported it in this way that was like really hard to use. And you had to find out what your API root was, which is kind of a confusing thing to understand.
Well, it was and, a second class citizen, basically.
Yeah. So it's always a second class citizen in this software. And I don't know if it's because the API is different or despite it, but we're getting software that just supports Pump.io right now. And I think that's a really powerful thing. Like, I think that can be a really big thing. Like, Audium just dropped support for StatusNet. And it's like, well, they didn't put a lot of effort into it, so it's not that big a deal for them to drop it, right? Whereas I think it's going to be harder for, say, Impeller to drop support for Pump.io, right? It's an Android client that's based around Pump.io from top to bottom, right? And so I think it requires more of a commitment from client developers, but it also means that we're in it together. And I think that that's been great. Library support, there's now a Python library. I know that there is a Ruby library under development. It's got like 0.01 version. There's a Java library that's under development. I think I saw a Perl library come by, so that'll be kind of cool. And then I'm collecting the stuff that I've done in Node.js, and that's going to end up being its own library within NPM. So my hope is that we have pretty good support for Pump.io across languages that makes it easier for programmers to use the libraries rather than have to develop for the API directly. I think that when you ask people to commit, they actually commit more than if you say, like, it's the easiest thing in the world, just like, let's change, which is what we were telling people with StatusNet, and it also meant they didn't have much of a commitment to it. I think also, like, the Pump.io API is very much about social activities. So you can do practically any kind of social activity and put it into Pump.io, whereas the Twitter API is about making tweets. So I think that it takes a little while for people to understand how the Pump.io API works. It's so general, it's a little hard to get exactly, like, how do I post a note? How do I follow somebody? But once you get that, it's like, well, I could do anything with this. So I think it's going to encourage more creative applications too.
The Pump.io software is actually a lot less complicated than StatusNet is. I mean, it was very difficult to understand StatusNet, and it was very big. I don't know whether it's just because I'm more familiar with Node.js, but it certainly seems to come across a lot simpler and easier to understand. I guess that's because it's young as well.
Sorry, that's good to hear, Luke, because we have a question here from Helmut in Dortmund, who says, when will Luke Slater get off his fat ass and produce Pumpy Curse?
I want to know that too.
That wasn't a rhetorical question, Luke.
That's a genuine question, eh?
Soon. I haven't had time recently.
Okay.
Generally, but I will start working on it, I think, now that I've started looking at the API and all that kind of thing. So the thing is that Identicurse is actually pretty badly written. Me and PeaceGrid wrote it when we were quite young and new to Python, so it's a bit terrible.
You wrote it in 48 hours, didn't you? Or was it less than that?
Something like that. The first sort of working version was something like 48 hours.
You'd like to start clean from ground zero and start?
Yeah, essentially. It needs to be pretty much written again.
So it's a lot of work, yeah, okay. It's not just a port, yeah.
Breaking news, folks.
Yeah, no time soon. Sorry about that. Kickstarter.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I feel like it one day and then it gets done in 48 hours again.
Maybe the FSF will take it on.
Yeah, exactly. If you could just abandon whatever software you want and the FSF. That's been my experience. Just throw it away. It's like you're launching it towards the garbage can and they intercept it and take it.
Just change its name to GNU Identicurse, yeah?
Have you seen Muon, the Muon client?
Yes.
It's definitely nowhere near the sophistication of Identicurse, obviously. But it's in the same ballpark. It's Python, it's curses based, and it uses the PyPump API.
Speaking to the developer, they mainly have started working on it to test the PyPump library that they developed.
Right.
But I mean, having looked at the code, it's better than Identicurse is, so maybe it would be something to work off.
You could probably like fork it and start from it or something. One of the things that has just been great over the last few months is that developers have been working on this. Like when Jessica started doing like PyPump, I was like, this is fantastic. We're going to have a lot more people working now that that's running. It's been fantastic that it goes. Like, and a lot of people I know who are developing for Pump.io are using either PyPump, the new Ruby one, things like that. So they've been really cool. So you guys don't want to ask me any hard questions?
We got plenty of hard questions. We're still doing the easy ones. We're just warming you up.
All right, hit me with a hard one. Let's do it.
The elephant in the room, Evan, that you said I will discuss anything apart from this subject is the identity to pump conversion, which originally was slated to take 12 hours or over a week. It actually took 5 weeks. Now, I've got sympathy for you because I've worked on data migration, so big corporate clients, and they're bloody hard. It takes me 5 weeks to get out of them what they want to migrate. So when you said that I'm migrating a year, an hour, 5 years, 5 hours, double it for contingency, add on 5 hours, I just thought, oh my God, do not say that. Do not say that. So, I mean, would you like to just give us a very brief post-mortem on how that went and maybe the lessons you learned from it and what you learned about the infrastructure and Mongo? Or...
The first thing that I learned is don't do a data migration the way that I did it, right? So one of the things that I think is kind of cool that I did with StatusNet that works on an individual level really nicely is that when you do a backup of your StatusNet account, what we give you is a list of the activities in chronological order. So Evan joined Identica, Evan posted a message, Evan followed Bradley, Evan posted another message, right? So it's like a replay system in chronological order. You can replay that on another status network, and it more or less comes out pretty nicely to replicate the state of the original account. It's not great, but it's pretty good. It works pretty nicely in that micro level. It didn't work that well at a macro level, and especially going between platforms. But I thought it was going to be a lot easier. Like, clearly, I thought it was going to be a lot easier. So I think that if I was going to do this data migration again, rather than having this kind of, it's almost like a macro recorder where it's like you record all the keystrokes and then play them back again. Actually go in, get the full state of the account, and replicate the state of that account in the new server. By the time I realized this was a much better mechanism, things had gone along far enough that I was like, well, I really have to kind of finish this out. My expectation had been, you know, about a week of data migration, and it came out to a little over a month that it took to do it. The privacy model between StatusNet and Pump.io is significantly different, and I was having a hard time making them kind of mesh up correctly. That was a big issue, but I wanted to make sure that I wasn't leaking private information that people didn't want to share, that kind of thing. So I wanted to make sure it all came across. That was probably the biggest thing that cost me time. Getting migrations, then going back and testing the database after it migrated meant that, you know, it just took a lot longer than I wanted it to. At this point, though, I'm pretty happy about it. I'm glad that I did it in a way that there was continuity of a service all the way up. You know, I think we had about 4 hours of downtime total. There were some parts, I think, that could have been done better. The other thing I think that was kind of a pain is that, obviously, like every piece of modern software on the web, we don't keep clear text passwords on the server. For people who don't do software, they may not know that applications don't store your password internally. What they do is they store a hash that should only be retrievable from your, if you provide the right password. That means that when we were switching over from StatusNet to Pump.io, I didn't actually have the passwords to put into the new server. I had the email addresses so people can do the recovery, but I didn't have the passwords. So that meant that when we did the conversion, there were a lot of people who had old email addresses and their Identica account, and they weren't able to recover. So that's been kind of a problem too. And I've been, you know, fielding like a few dozen of those every day to get people back up to speed. But it's working out okay. So those were the two big things that really messed me up on the data imports. If I was doing it again, I'd probably do it in a very different way. Fortunately, I'm not going to do it again.
Well, exactly. That's one of my points. It was a one-off disposable migration. I mean, David himself was chatting to each other privately saying, I wouldn't give two hoots if my 5 years' data had gone, and we just started from ground zero. I got my friends and followers. And did you ever contemplate the option, or did you think that would provoke so much antagonism and resistance that you just didn't dare contemplate it?
It comes down to the question of, like, what's the point of migrating Identica? Like, why keep Identica at all, right? So one thing I could have done is just said, okay, Identica's closed. Everybody go sign up for one of these pump servers.
Identica's not closing.
And that might have been a way to do it, right? Like, everybody move on. We're all moving, right? Identica as a site over the last, like, 5 years, it still gets a ton of traffic. It's still a pretty high traffic site. It still has, like, a lot of, like, PageRank with Google. And it still is the, like, kind of reputation place for a lot of people. So a lot of people link to their Identica account from their blog or whatever, and so having some continuity of those URLs through the migration, I thought, was pretty important.
As well as being able to test Pump.io on the larger user servers as well.
Exactly. And actually, it's done amazingly well. It's done really, really well. It's definitely as good or better as Identica running on StatusNet was. And I feel like that's been a good proof of the platform, too. I had been testing, and I was getting good performance out of Pump.io. And it's turned out to be, like, totally worth it. I definitely considered plenty of times, like, look, it's time to take Identica down and bring it back up. But I'm also incredibly stubborn.
I suspect you're a perfectionist. And that's I dread to think how many iterations you did where you cleared up the database and started again clean. I suspect it was more than 10.
After I started, like, this is the big one, it's going to happen, there were probably, like, between 5 and 10 that I was like, all right, we're starting again. The fact is that probably people are never going to look back at that stuff.
Google juice and that.
Yeah, there's Google juice. There's also, like, if you said something really hilarious in 2009, right, it's still there.
That's when May 24th, 2009.
So it was the one time.
On top of popular for 2 weeks, that.
There's actually a balance, too. We had, like, 1.5, 1.6 million accounts on StatusNet, registered accounts. And I had a pretty big question about bringing all those accounts over. I don't like the feeling of having a social network where, like, 95% of the people who ever registered are not active anymore, you know, and having this feeling like the Identica that I love is an Identica of the past. I kind of wanted people to start thinking about what is Identica now and in the future. And so part of the decision of making this change was saying, like, these old accounts are no longer active. People who were formerly on Identica and no longer use it, they don't necessarily want or need to be on this next thing. And so let's let that go. It was half shutting everything down and half moving on. I think technically it would have been fine to bring all those other accounts on. At the same time, I'm really happy that we kind of kept the core of active users in the next version of Identica.
Sure, yeah, no, I think we're all very grateful you did, for your persistence and tenacity,
I mean, I've had a couple people who've written me and they're like, I really love Identica. I wasn't active, like, I didn't post a lot or follow people or favorite things, but I still read it. And I'm like, well, you know, then you can read it from another another Pump.io server, right? Like, it doesn't, that shouldn't be too bad for you. So what I'm going to be doing is for the people who ask me that didn't make it in for this Identica conversion, they're going to go to a separate server. So they're going to be on, like, the orphan server. And we'll see how that shakes out. I think it's going to be good.
Yeah. Okay, and finally on the migration, Evan, we've covered quite a lot of it. But we've got a quick question from a listener, Marjolein Katsema from Utrecht in Holland. My StatusNet import has failed up 18 hours and 47 minutes. Which line of code do I need to look at? Thanks. No, no, only joking.
Well, that's not a joke. Marja Line is our number one listener.
Yes, she is. She will be listening to this.
She may be our only listener.
First of all, is that how you pronounce it? Marja Line?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
Really? That's lovely, actually.
What did you used to think?
I thought it was Marjolaine, which sounds really that doesn't sound... Marjolaine is really nice. That's a wonderful name. Marjolaine, I have to admit, like, there was a point in this conversion where she's like, I'm going to go do my own thing, where I was like, you know, this is like... I think she has been, of the users of Identica that I have had problems with, she's probably been the one that, like, rubs me the wrong way personally more than anybody else. And not really because of anything, you know, she does or says, but she's just she always has been very challenging about my design decisions. She's very challenging about technical decisions with the software. And like, part of me has been like, all right, well, you know, she's going to go do something else. Great. And then another part of me is like, well, you know, am I losing something from this, right? Like, having someone who questions what you do every single step of the way helps you question yourself, too. I kind of regret losing her as a sounding board, as difficult as our relationship has been. Back when I had people working for me, right, I would be in the office, and if you guys remember Arik or Jordan C., people would call to me, like, they'd be like, Evan, don't read Identica. Like, don't open it. I'm like, what? What should I not do? They're like, we've got it under control. Don't worry. And I'm like, what happened? And they're like, you know, Marjolaine's really, really angry about something. We've got it under control. You don't need to get on it. You know, and I'm like, oh, but now I want to see what she's saying. So like, sometimes I would, sneak on when my employees weren't actually looking, just so I would know like what was going on. So, but they definitely wanted to make sure that I wasn't looking at it when it was really bad. So, but yeah, I mean, it's definitely like having difficult users, you know, present company accepted, is like good for you and bad for you. I just roll with it. Like, sometimes I'm happy it happens. Oh my God, can you mute for a second, Mr. Typey Type?
Yeah, it's not Luke. He's coding Pumpy Curse.
Luke, yeah.
As we speak.
I think, oh, you might be ordering a free bin liner so that you can sign it and we send it to Marjolaine.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, Marjolaine was a fierce advocate and a critic at the same time. She was a very opinionated lady. And, and that wasn't new. She was active in the Harari community and the same thing. But I mean, she. You know, to be fair, I quite miss her input, and that's one reason I'm on Twitter, just to monitor her progress. But yeah, the thing that got me was that you could tell that you were in the real depths of this migration, and you had 1,001 things on your plate, and she was peppering you with the main questions about which line of code do I look at. I just found it hilarious.
Clearly, the community and the network is really important to her, and you know, I don't think anything matters as much to a software developer as knowing that like stuff that you wrote matters that much to anybody in the world, right?
Sure.
Like, for those of us that work in technology, like, there's nothing worse than writing software that nobody uses, right? You spend a year and a half working on something and it never matters to anybody, or it's the crappy payroll system that everybody hates to use.
Well, it's just similar to a podcast that no one listens to, so we're comfortable with that. I mean,
but you put so much into it, and then, you know, nobody gets to it. So when somebody's passionate about something you create, it's amazing. At the same time, when they're passionately angry at you all the time, that's also like kind of painful. So
I wouldn't say she's angry. I'd say just demanding. I wouldn't say she's ever angry. I mean, I think she respected the work you've done and all the stuff you've given her. And the fact is, they're using your StatusNet software now. That's the irony, really, in a way.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's really hard to be mad at people for using the other software that you made. So it's like, great, like, go do it, you know? And so I've been really happy that's happening, and I'm happy that people are doing it. But I've tried to, like, at times, you know, concentrate on the fact that people are passionate about this stuff. It matters to them. And that's amazing to have happen. With Marjolaine in particular, I don't know if this is true of all Dutch people, but I've found in the past that Dutch people tend to be kind of blunt when they're talking about it. Like, you know, English people, they're going to add in as many softening phrases as they possibly can, right? Like, I don't know if you happen to notice, but I was just thinking that on my, right? And Dutch people are like, this sucks, you have to fix it, right? And it's a very, like, direct form of address. And and that might be a cultural thing, too, where it's like, you know, whereas if you were an American or English, like, that is what you say to, like, a naughty child. Right, like you don't speak to another adult that way. So it's a very, very strange way to be addressed. So that always gets under my skin. So I don't know how much is personality, how much is just that. So the other thing that I'm really interested in seeing come up better, they've started drifting back, but the Persian speakers, right? You know, I mean, I have no effing idea what those people are talking about, right? But they love Identica. I mean, they use Identica all the time. I don't know if Identica is not blocked in Iran because it's a .ca. So it's like Canada is friendly to Iran or something, or at least it's not an American company. But it feels like there's a really lively community there, and it might be a community that those people, you know, can't find other places. So I'm really excited that they have that, and I hope that, you know, the conversion gets them across too. I'm completely unable to interface with anybody in that community, so I have no idea, you know, what they know or think about Identica right now. Like, they've always been nice, but that's kind of a cool thing, you know? It's cool that there's a platform there for them. I mean, I know it's frustrating for English speakers to have, like, the entire popular page be filled with, like, Farsi. Like, that's really weird. But at the same time, it's like, wow.
Vous habitez à Montréal. Parlez-vous français bien?
I'm going to answer in English. I feel
would
really
you say we? Oui, enough.
Oui.
Okay, great.
Oui. I speak pretty good French.
You can't commit to it on air. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
We believe you.
I feel funny speaking French with people who are not native French speakers. It makes me feel a little weird. So,
how do you think I feel?
I'm sure. It's got to be strange. But wait a minute. Where are you now? Where do you live now? You're in London. Yeah.
We're in the EU, so we're practically French, aren't we?
Yeah, I'm a fluent French speaker, though.
French stroke German. I mean, we've got German royalty. You know, we're in the EU with basically continentals.
But now, is Luke back from Zurich, or is he still there?
Yeah no, I'm in Cambridge.
I'm actually bisexual. That's why I look good.
Yeah, but you didn't have to learn any German while you were in Zurich, right? Like, you don't have to do anything.
I mean, obviously, it was all English at the office, but I mean, I knew a bit of German to start with. However, it's all Swiss German there, which is tremendously different from regular German, to the point where German people can't actually understand Swiss people when they're talking. So it was very difficult to pick up.
Yeah, but you can live in a European country and not speak the language very well. It's a very confusing thing. Yeah, so I speak enough French to get by. I can order a coffee. I can argue with the electrical company about my bill. I get a little bit shaky when it comes to, like, talking about books or movies or stuff like that. Like, more complicated concepts are a little tough for me, but I'm able to do enough French to feel like I survive. My kids are both learning French in school, and they have much better accents than I do, and they speak much more fluently. You know, they've been doing it since they were born, but we do mostly English at home and then French outside.
Okay. The acid test then, Evan, is can you pronounce Maxime Pelletier?
Yeah, I think it's Maxime Pelletier.
Oh, very good.
That's nicely done.
That's my answer. Very good.
That's exactly what you said, Andy.
Well, you've just been mimicking me, I know, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Should we move on to the quick-fire question round, David?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
How should we do it? Should we alternate, or should I just do them all?
Oh, let's alternate. That'd be fun.
Okay, then this is a new feature we've got for Teen Up 9.
Hang on, we need to decide what order we're going in.
I'll start, obviously. Then okay. David, then Luke.
Okay.
Luke, have you got the document up?
I'm trying to find the... Yeah, I've got it.
You mean you've been doing all this without our show notes? You've been doing it ad lib?
Unstructured free-for-all.
No, I've got it.
You bastard! You complete and utter bastard!
You come in here, suck all the glory. Well, this is a new section, Evan, for all our guests. It's just to give people at home a picture behind the person, not the technology geek.
Okay.
Not the guy who's done press interviews for the New York Times, but something about the man behind the man. Are we all ready, Luke?
Yeah.
Okay, so Evan, these are quick fire questions. Not yes or no, but one or the other. No justification or reasoning, just quick fire answers. REM or U2?
REM.
Montreal or Vancouver?
Montreal.
Country Feedback or Orange Crush?
Orange Crush.
Ice hockey or baseball?
Pass. Baseball.
The Killers or The National?
Ooh, The Killers.
Nevermind or In Utero?
Nevermind.
Bath or Bath? That's an English thing.
Bath.
Sit down desk or stand up desk?
Sit down desk. Screw standing up.
I thought you were stand up.
That whole stand up thing, it's completely a farce. I don't believe it for a second. We have worked as a species for millions of years just to get a chance to sit on our asses and do nothing. And why are they driving evolution backwards? That's what I want to know. Stand up, terrible thing.
Sit down.
Oh, sorry.
Apocalypse Now or The Godfather Part 2?
Apocalypse Now. There's more drugs.
Sushi or Indian?
Indian.
This is a complex one. Barbecues, gas or coals?
Gas. That's a tough one. I know I should say coals, but I use gas just because it's a lot easier. And you can actually cook much faster. It takes like an hour less to get something done.
Sean Connery or Daniel Craig?
Actually, Sean Connery.
Sex Pistols or The Clash?
The Clash.
Kurt Cobain. This is another complex question, which you already know the answer to. Murder or suicide?
Suicide.
Or conspiracy.
Conspiracy. I'll take conspiracy.
Good answer. That concludes the quick fire round. Thank you, Evan.
Those were awesome.
8 out of 12 questions correctly.
Do I get the prize? Do I get anything for this?
You got a bin liner, yeah.
Yeah.
Those were actually pretty good questions.
I had any of those before.
I have not. And thank God, like, they weren't the, like, Emacs versus VI one, which I found really tiresome.
That techno geek religious wars.
Yeah, who cares? Come on. I was kind of thinking the questions would be things like, why don't my notification indicators ever go down to zero?
Oh, we're not. We all know it's stuck at 4 and 20 forever, and that's fine. If someone cares, they'll send you an email. It doesn't matter.
There you go. My immediate, like, kind of development stuff for Pump.io is getting some things like the notifications. There are a couple of bugs in the list handling. There are some control things, like being able to control your email notifications or change your email address. I want to get an 030 out as soon as possible so that people can start using a more stable version. But it is kind of funny that there are still some, like, pretty bad UI issues.
Well, possibly, and people get very irritated about that, and understandably so for some people, but the point is, when I hear you talk in interviews, without being an arse-licker, you are some sort of visionary who has a really big picture, long-term view and strategy. So when people say, notifications are stuck on 20, don't you think it's, like, trivial beyond belief and people should just see the bigger picture for a bit? I can't understand why you don't get more angry more often.
That is a very nice thing to say. And I do agree that people need to get off my case and quit bothering me. But at the same time, you know, if the point of software is to, like, help people do something that they want to do, right? It's supposed to be fun. And when there are, like, kind of cracks in the facade and something that seems like it's supposed to work a certain way doesn't work that way, it throws everything into question. It's like, you know, I see this notification number, and my expectation is that if I go read these notifications, it's going to drop down to zero, and it doesn't. Then it's like, well, what else am I making assumptions about that aren't true?
Yeah.
The answer is probably, like, everything in your life. But, you know, I would like it to be, like, you can poke around and click on the followers link, and it's going to show you the list of your followers. Or you click on the notification thing, and it's going to do about what you expect. The more that we do that, the more that it becomes a fun platform for people to use, right?
Sure.
I mean, I think that there are still some things that need some fine-tuning, but I want to get this interface in good shape to release so that I can start working on some of the more interesting stuff. I don't know if you guys saw the, I think it was called Pump Migrate.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I used it, yeah.
Yeah, Andy used it, and I was like, that's awesome. Like, that's one of the things I have on my to-do list, and I'm like, check, somebody else did it. Joey Haas started working on RSS Bridge. So some of the things that I've been kind of like, okay, I really need to get to these next, are already happening because people want them so much. And I think that's going to be like kind of the toughest balance for me over the next few months, is like letting people do the kind of stuff that they want to do with the software, with the platform right now. So let that kind of third-party ecosystem kind of build up, or that community participation build up, and yet at the same time make it useful enough that people actually want to keep using it, right? So it's going to be a fine line to walk. Make it just useless enough that people feel that they have to write software for it, and just useful enough that people are going to bother. And I think that's going to be really interesting. I think it's also like where this software wins, or where this platform wins, is if it becomes everybody's instead of just mine. I'm really hoping that there's more third-party client development, more websites use it, and I can start getting more contributions for the core software too.
Sure. Okay, interesting. Yeah.
So I think it should be a fun next few months. At least I hope so. Anything else? What can I do?
Obviously, you listen to This Is Not a Podcast. Are you big on Podcast 7, or have you got too busy?
Obviously.
How did I miss this?
Yeah, I am. I'm a big podcast fan, actually. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I exercise daily for about an hour, and I always listen to podcasts while I'm doing it. Sometimes I want to listen to stuff that's technical. Sometimes I absolutely do not want to listen to stuff that's technical. So it varies. I listen to all kinds of podcasts. I haven't listened to the full TINAP back catalog, so to speak.
What? You've misled us. You're all like, hearing the false pretenses.
I know. Like, I actually have not heard one with my dad on it.
Really?
Which is kind of bad. Yeah, I know. Isn't that terrible? So,
well, that was the famous Mumble tribute episode, wasn't it?
Was it?
Well, the old celebrity said Mumble is great and all that.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Was it? Yeah, we have been a bit tardy.
It was a very, very tiny little snippet with your dad on, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Plus, it's not safe for work with your dad.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
You're kidding me. My dad?
Yeah.
Oh, did he say a swear word? Yeah.
Yes, he did, yes.
That's shocking. No, I really want to hear.
Don't listen, Evan, please. Don't listen.
I know. It'll change my life. So are you guys, like, back in the swing? Are we going to have more regular releases now?
No, I don't think so.
No. our closing special.
I've got to edit this one. This could cause another breakdown. You know, exactly. I mean, you know.
Everyone is the last one. I decided to do a new one.
It'll probably take as much as the Identica migration, the edit.
Good.
One final thing. We're getting towards the end of the Evan part, but I know that you're interested in applying for Canadian citizenship. So the question just been added to that is, what is the full name of the recently born royal prince in England? Full name, please, including title.
You know what? That's a really good question. Does he get a dukedom already? Is he already a duke?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I know his name.
The city where Luke hails from.
Yeah, he owns.
He owns Luke.
Does he really? He is the prince of
Argenticus.
Argenticus. He really is the prince of Aberystwyth. Seriously? So he's little George. I think he got an Albert in there too, right? Isn't he George Albert something?
No,
he hasn't had a Prince Albert yet.
No, he hasn't had his Prince Albert. Yeah, I thought that William and Charles both were like Albert. Like, they kept Albert in the middle name somewhere.
You know more about this than we do.
Yeah. We've talked a little bit about this, but, you know, I'm an American by birth. I've lived in Canada for the last 10 years, and I want to start, like, actually participating in civic life and voting and stuff like that. So I want to become a Canadian citizen, but Canadian citizens have to swear allegiance to Her Royal Majesty the Queen. Not to, like, the country, but to the Queen. I'm like, that's 200 years of progress thrown down the drain. Why do I have to swear allegiance to the royal family? So I'm pretty reluctant to do it. My wife is like, whatever. It's just like some words. And I'm like, well, yeah, but it's kind of, you know, this solemn oath.
It's purely in name, isn't it? It doesn't mean anything.
Well, you say that, but before you know it, you'll be in Afghanistan on the front line. So I think you're reluctant as well founded.
Exactly. Yeah. Or, you know, she's calling me every night for pizza or something. Come on, I need someone to scrub this floor. And I'm like, I said this stupid oath. Like, I have to do it, whatever she says. Yeah, so that whole little baby thing. Are we talking about the baby thing now?
Yeah, his formal name is George Alexander Louis Windsor, I guess, Prince of Cambridge. Your citizenship's gone west, sorry.
You say Windsor, I guess, but actually it's not Windsor, is it? That's a fiction. His real surname is Saxe Gotha Coburg or something, isn't
That's
it?
That's right!
Really? I thought the surname was literally Windsor, Harry.
The German, no, they made that up to sound more English during the war.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Well, they just picked on the town of Windsor and said, all right, right.
Well, I suppose it's where they lived, you know. They don't have much imagination, do they? I mean,
yeah.
They're not the sharpest tools in a box.
Indeed.
The prince consort was Saxe Gotha Coburg or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's the family name, but they go by Windsor, so they don't sound like Germans, which would be terrible. So there's not an Albert in there. So he gets to be Prince of Cambridge. That's good. And that's the traditional, like, great-grandson thing. They're kind of stretching it out here.
Parents are Duke and Duchess of Cambridge. I presume it comes from that.
Yeah.
I don't follow it too much, obviously, apart from this 12-page supplement.
Oh, so that's right. They are the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge. That's right. Okay, I get it. So he is the heir to the throne of Cambridge.
Lady Diana, car accident or murder?
Yeah.
don't get into that. We've finished the quickfire round. Sorry, we're not getting into that.
This whole thing is kind of ridiculous, and it's pretty amazing that we're in, like, the 21st century, and we still have this hereditary royalty that still plays, like, a major part in people's lives. Like,
I don't know. I think in the UK, it's mainly a tourism thing. The royal family makes a huge amount of money for the government in all the people that come to marvel at the Queen associated with
this. Really?
It does interest me how people do seem to genuinely follow all the royal marriage and royal birth and all that kind of thing.
Isn't the royal family a bit like Identica, right? I mean, you know, if you just took it away, no one would really miss it, would they? No offence to you, Evan. I mean, people would remember it, fondly, perhaps, but they would be able to live their lives without it, wouldn't they? That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, they would. It's got its good and bad things, too, right? Like, this is an interesting line of questioning. Identica can be kind of unhealthy for the greater federated network. It's got this kind of gravitational pull that attracts a lot of the conversation just to that network. It may be better for the network not to have Identica existing at all and have lots of small nodes instead of one big node. But at the same time, you know, it does provide some cohesion for that network. And it's definitely like a point of pride for many of the people who are on that network. So it's a good or bad. Same thing with the royal family, right? Like, there's something a little bit strange about still having this concept of people being superior by birth just because they married into the right family. Now they have this kind of magical twinkling aura about them. And yet, at the same time, it is a connection that millions, or is it billions? Are there billions of subjects of the British royal family? At least hundreds of millions, right? There are hundreds of millions of people around the world for whom this provides a cultural touchstone. So, I don't know. It's definitely a very weird thing. I don't know if we're going to get to the end of this century and be like, haha, that's really weird. Like, people thought about the Holy Roman Empire, like, in the 1800s. They'd be like, wow, there's still a Holy Roman Empire? Like, we may be like, there's still a British royal family? Or we're like, yes, it's great, and it's still great to have it. I don't know. I think the fact that most of them are pretty good-looking is probably what is keeping them going at this point. If they were more homely people, I think there would probably be less interest in having a royal family. They make good copy. They take good pictures.
This is conspiracy theory, but I suspect they may be more powerful than we think.
Really?
Which is why they're still there. Because actually, I mean, your good-looking theory works with the women, maybe, that they've married into.
Yeah.
But the men are not really good-looking at all, are they? They've got big ears, big noses. They're bald. They're not good-looking at all, are they?
That is true, but they kind of infuse, like, they get these infusions of new blood from the lesser nobility.
From the commoners.
And from the commoners, right? They go.
Case is a commoner, isn't
it? That's right. So they go find the hottest commoners that they can find, and they breed with them to make better-looking royals.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, it's not a bad system if you're at the top of that pyramid. Like, if you can pull that off, it's pretty great. And come on, like, can you think of a better way to pull in a bar than if you're like, oh, I happen to be heir to the throne? They've got to do pretty well. So do you guys want me to get off at this point while you do the rest of the show? Or is it okay if I hang out?
I don't think that's legal in the UK anymore.
Well, hey. Well, no, it depends on you. You're on holiday, Evan. If you want to go and meet your family for breakfast, please leave. But you're very welcome to stay for the remainder. It's maybe half an hour to go. Just cover the other stuff.
Okay, I'm going to let you guys go. This has been great, by the way. I'm going to mute out, but I'll keep listening as long as my network keeps going. So thanks for having me. This has been really good.
That's been great. Thanks, Evan.
And I'm always available, so ask me next time. I'm happy to do it.
All right.
Okay, cool. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Evan. Cheers
Evan. Thanks.
So that was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, that should keep you busy for the next 4 weeks.
Keep you busy?
Yeah.
By editing it.
It shouldn't be too difficult because you did talk a lot.
His audio is okay.
Should be easier to edit.
Yeah, yeah. No, I do worry about the edit, yeah. Do you think we should carry on or just cover it that?
We should just carry on for a bit, shouldn't we?
Okay, what bits do you want to cover out of the remaining bits? There's a lot of it's out of date, isn't it?
Well, out of date hasn't stopped us before, has it? So,
no, true.
Well, Google Reader, we should briefly discuss that. What are we using instead? I'll promote Feedbin. Feedbin's pretty good, but you have to pay for it.
Oh, is it a token sum a month, is it? Oh, yeah.
Well, it was $2 a month. I think it might have gone up as I was an early adopter. I got mine for $20 a year, so...
I was using the oldreader.com.
Yeah, it's gone
down.
They
had an outage over the weekend, but let's be honest, I can live without it for 2 or 3 days, because when it comes back, all the blogs will be there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was really pissed off about that. I don't know, it turned me against Google more than anything, really. I found it as like a trail of trust, almost.
Really?
Yeah, really, yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
I mean, more than the NSA stuff. I know everyone says, oh, we all knew about that anyway, and we just pretended we didn't. But we didn't know about it. You know, we suspected it.
We suspected it, yeah.
We probably thought it was happening, but we didn't know about it.
But Google have been very, very open with the fact that they have to give governments information when they're asked for it.
That's adhering to the law, isn't it?
But with a warrant. It wasn't a warranted thing for, you know, Joe Blow in Detroit. It was for the Detroit area.
Mm. Yeah, but from what I understand, this has actually been adhering to the law. I mean, there have been laws passed, you know, sort of secretly and underhanded that have made this kind of thing possible. It's not illegal.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't asked about the NSA thing. Edward Stone, I'm sick of hearing about him.
The point is, I mean, most of us, you know, believe we don't have anything to worry about because we haven't done anything wrong, yeah?
Mm.
The point is that one day in the future... You might do something, or you might not do anything, but somebody might want to make a case against you because they don't like you for some reason, yeah? And then they're able to look back into your history and then pervert or manipulate what you've said or done online in the past and make a case against you, yeah? Even though you're innocent.
Gross invasion of privacy, I agree with all of that.
Yeah.
Especially when we've seen, you know, fairly innocuous comments or jokes have been blown completely out.
Exactly, yeah, exactly, yeah.
The old Nottingham Airport thing, yeah.
Yeah. And the London riots, you know, there's still kids in jail now, aren't there, because of said things in a joking way about sort of, let's start a riot down in our village, you know. I'll probably go to prison for saying that now, won't I? So
I doubt it, but maybe.
Yeah, probably not. That's been a bit ambitious, isn't it, in terms of... our listeners.
Maybe maybe the NSA are listening to TINAP as well.
I think that's unlikely, isn't it, really? Luke, what are you using instead of a Google Reader?
Well, in the last couple of months, I've pretty much given up on reading feeds because it's a massive take-up of time. And I found that eventually I'm not even reading the blogs, you know, I'm just sort of scanning through them. So I've taken to getting most of my news from sort of individual sites and... actually making myself read them as well.
Are you reading more or less then?
Less, I think, definitely.
Sounds like what you were saying before is you were just sort of skimming headlines and summaries, but now you're actually reading articles or...
Overall, I spend less time catching up. The things I am reading, I'm actually reading. It's not scanning through them.
Yeah. So the death of Google Reader, mixed emotions then, really, between the three of us.
Yeah, well, I was annoyed. I mean... What struck me was, what would it cost them to keep that service going?
Probably about $7,000 a month, I would have thought, something like that.
Mm. Yeah. So
well, from what I understand is, as well, because there wasn't much internal interest in actually developing it as well, and they have to keep it on with new APIs and all of that kind of thing, and security updates. I mean, there's a lot of development cost as well.
Well, that's fine, but why didn't they just open it up and give it to the community and say, look, if you want to keep it going... Or give it to the FSF or somebody.
GNU Reader.
Yeah, exactly. But Andy, you were saying that's upset you so much you want to give up using Google altogether. Has Andy gone? This is just like TINAP of old, isn't it?
He's too upset by the conversation. It's taken a moment.
I was thinking of ditching my Gmail and getting a Fastmail account because of the NSA stuff. I mean, partly to do with Google Reader because, like, you know, maybe they'll do the same to Gmail one day, you know.
But what you have to realise as well is that most email is sent unencrypted across the internet and is actually quite easy to intercept and read. Mm. So really the only defence is to actually encrypt your emails.
Yeah.
And that can be done through any medium.
This may be a failure of my average person understanding, but I thought one thing with Fastmail is that they encrypt your email by default. Yes, I could set it up using, say, Thunderbird, for example, but I can't be arsed.
Yeah.
Also, the people I send email to aren't going to have encryption at their end, are they? All know what to do with an encrypted email that I send them. So
yeah, especially since most people are just using Gmail or Yahoo or Hotmail.
Yeah.
So, you know, your email is still going through to them and is available.
Yeah. It's just a waste of time, isn't it?
Well, it's a waste of time until, you know, everybody is using a service like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could say that Google could implement this kind of thing, but, you know, then they would not be able to harvest the data for themselves, which is a bit big part of their
Well, that's business. Their business plan, isn't it? Yeah, like Facebook. Mm. Yeah.
So we also had the exciting news of a murder in James Robertson Street in Leaf.
It was on the BBC.
Men in white suit. Well, yeah, it was. So it wasn't all hallucinations and fantasy. It was actually true.
Yep.
There were men in white suits doing forensic examination of his neighbour's house.
Did they find anyone responsible for that? I can't remember.
Well, I read it was a J. Roberts. No, it wasn't a J. Robertson. I don't know. Wasn't it some drugs triangle or something?
Yeah, I think it was something
which is James
related,
said.
Yeah. Maybe.
He may have been wearing a hoodie, that's all I know. He's suspect types. I wonder if he ever gave evidence to the police as a witness.
Yeah, because he does have lots of cameras around.
He does.
Yeah.
At his remote control bedside lamp now.
One thing I do like about James is he's got all these cameras and he's always watching and stuff, isn't he? And sort of interpreting what's going on and trying to find out what's going on by himself. You know, he spends a lot of time in the woods, doesn't he? And sort of in the park, looking for evidence and filming it. But he doesn't like talking to the police either, does he? So.
No.
I think the police have hassled him a few times, haven't they, as well, about things he said on Twitter and stuff.
Yeah. Although not related to this murder, but...
No.
Okay.
That's mostly related to torturing children with rhubarb, I think, wasn't it? Or something like that. Although he said that he'd never done that. I should make that clear.
Indeed, yes, he did. Yeah. He hadn't tortured children with rhubarb, that's true.
Yeah.
It was celery on it. You've got the death roundup. Margaret Thatcher did die.
Yep.
God rest her soul.
Good riddance.
Aaron Schwartz, he took his own life, didn't he, after being...
Pity Evans not with us, though, because he wrote a blog post about that, didn't he, and got quite involved in sort of promoting...
About Aaron?
Suicide awareness stuff and...
Oh, yeah.
Evan.
Yeah.
The guy we just had on.
He's still alive.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think so, anyway.
Evan is still alive, yeah.
He's now pleading tiredness after 3 hours on the phone, but...
He may be suicidal.
Yeah, he might be, yeah. Talking to those twats, Zigby's twats for 3 hours.
Let's hope not.
Yeah.
One thing we didn't raise with him, and maybe it's for the best, I mean, previous people who've been on TINAP, you know, whether as presenters or guests, have, you know, had some pretty dire life events happen
exactly,
to them, haven't they?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's the TINAP curse,
the curse of TINAP.
Ed Morgan's marriage broke up, Richard Cutts lost his girlfriend, and Gordon fell out with Shitty Tits, or his name is.
Shitty Tits. Yeah, that's better than my Shitzelwitz, isn't it?
Yeah. The Duke of Edinburgh hasn't actually died.
Hasn't he? Oh,
he was poor, but recovered. And Nelson Mandela, my wife was convinced, once he was ventilated, she said, that's it, he's dead, he's on life support. Wasn't he discharged? Did he go home, or was he still in hospital?
I think he was discharged at one point, and then he went back.
Is he alive or dead? No, if he's dead, you'd hear about it. But...
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, he's 94 years, as my wife said, he's 94 years old. You can't live forever.
So. Oh, he's 95, no.
Is he? Oh, he has a birthday, yeah. Happy birthday. So he's hanging in there. Luke returns from Zurich to Cambridge. Andy resumes some sort of work and is just as bored and unmotivated as he ever was. Bitcoin. Why have you written Bitcoin there, David?
Was that me?
Bitcoin. Oh, I don't know. Someone wrote Bitcoin.
Oh, no, forget it.
Wasn't me.
You were going to give us a roundup on your garden. Grow your own.
I'm growing some tomatoes. My tomatoes are alive and well. Thank you very much. My real ones.
What happened to the pineapple? Did that not take off?
The pineapple didn't take off. I think when I planted it, it was before this glorious English summer that we're having now, when it was sort of cold and wet.
You have to pretty much keep them inside for most of the year to get them to grow. And then...
I should have started it inside, yeah. I was overambitious.
And you have to get a pretty... a live pineapple as well. I mean, you have to get a pretty fresh one to get it to grow.
Yeah, maybe that was a problem.
But you should try again, have a pineapple garden.
I don't know about a pineapple garden, but I will try again with a pineapple.
Live blog it on Identica.
No, I won't be live blogging it, no.
Your photos always go down well on the pump or StatusNet, David. People seem to react well to them.
That's live gardening, isn't it?
Live gardening, yeah.
I mean, I think pineapple gardening is just too specific, isn't it?
Mm.
I mean, I could do it.
People really seem to enjoy your food posts as well. well.
Oh yeah, the old meal time, yeah.
Fancy meals.
Fancy meals?
Well, I'm sure fancy meals. I normally say, what is that?
Exactly, yeah. Or, that almost looks good enough to eat.
Exactly.
That's what my wife says usually as well.
What about your meal? Hey! Yeah. Moving on to sports now, it's up in the section. Did you watch much of the Tour de France, David? Is that your bag or not?
No, I don't like it. My dad likes it, but he likes rugby as well, though. So.
Never the twain shall meet. Well, it's great to see Chris Froome win it. Second year running for a British winner, supposedly clean. But Luke, 1972, is a keen cycle fan, isn't he?
Yes.
Enjoyed following him on the pump and status net.
Bone Idol as well.
Bone Idol, yeah.
And R7.
Oh, yes, R7 with his Spanish olives.
They're all drug users, aren't they, basically? The cyclists, not R7 and Luke.
Yes. In 1996, they've now clarified 8 were positive drug tests and another 12 were suspicious. I mean, it's just... I mean, I know it's 15 years ago, but can you trust it? I don't know. And the other thing I asked Luke was, that David Miller, the Scottish cyclist, he's in the Sky team riding with Froome and Wiggins, and they're fiercely anti-doping, and yet they're riding with a convicted drug team. I mean, it just can't make sense to me. When he says it's, you know, them are the rules, and I just don't see it. I don't know. I can't imagine there's no resentment there between the clean ones and the ones, unless he's repented and he's now...
They're probably all doing it. It's just those ones have been caught, haven't they, and outed, so...
A lot of people have been outed. There was a year they were saying where, you know, they took the title off Armstrong because they found out that he was doping, and if they were going to give the title position to the next person who was in the position that didn't dope, it would be something like the person who came in sick.
Oh, really?
Which is just ridiculous.
I mean, that was a few years back now, but I hear your point, though, yeah. And then we've got Tyson Gay and Asafa Powell, bent athletes. But I think, as Luke said, the only solution is a lifetime ban. If you're found guilty, you're out of the sport forever. There's no point having a two-year ban where you can come back and potentially be banned again. It's just ridiculous to me. I can't see why they don't take a hard line with it.
Well, I mean, if you're only banning people for 2 years, then there's not that much preventative measure going on, because people will just go, I'm pretty much going to get away with it, and if I don't, I'm only off for 2 years.
Exactly, there's no disincentive. And on the subject of sport, Stav, Evan's father, we should mention this when he's on the line, he's run a half marathon, drugged up to the eyeballs with ephedrine and all sorts of coke and everything, but he's completed a half marathon, so well done, Stav Podromo. No swearing, please, we're British. And then we've got Dick's favourite segment, the football segment. I'm so bored about football, I can't even bring myself to talk about it. I've been listening to TalkSport for 2 months about Gareth Bale and Ronaldo and what-ifs and what-ifs. So let's skip football and move on to music. We've got some exciting news, haven't we? 3 months ago, you went to a gig, didn't you? With Luke. And with Ed as well, or not?
No, Ed joined us for the pre-gig drinks.
Oh, for pre's, okay.
Yeah, it was a good gig, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
For the listeners, maybe say who you went to see.
Who was it?
Stone Roses.
Stone Roses, hey. That's it, yeah. It was pretty amazing to see them, actually.
Half the crowd wearing the Ian Curtis haircuts as well.
Were they? Yeah, brilliant.
You had your John Squire haircut, didn't you?
Yeah. No, well, he has my haircut, yeah. So...
Where was that, Finsbury Park? Something like
Yeah.
Who was sporting?
Dizzy Rascal, I think, or something ridiculous.
Hard luck.
We didn't get there until after that, though, so...
Okay. Were they as tight as ever?
They were pretty tight. Ian Brown, of course, can't sing for Toffee, but didn't matter too much because the crowd knew every line of every song.
They were carrying them, yeah.
I mean, I haven't been to that many gigs, and maybe that's just the reason for this. For me, it was an interesting mix between being at a football match... Of what I thought a concert is like, you know, because everybody was chanting along with every song.
Right.
I mean, I really enjoyed Manny. I thought Manny was fucking brilliant.
Is he the bassist?
Yeah, he's the bass player. He's the heart and soul of the band, I think.
Yeah.
There's just something about him. He's got a bit of character and personality. I mean, Squire's a good guitarist, but he's a Jimmy Page wannabe, isn't he? And he's got no sort of obvious charisma, I don't think. Brown is just some sort of egomaniac who can't actually sing.
Yeah, I've heard Manny talk on a lot of these documentaries, and he seems quite a...
He's got a good sense of humour, I think, hasn't he? He's down to earth, you know.
Typical anchor.
Well, yeah. And the drummer's good, but I mean, you know, drummers are drummers, aren't they? They're just sort of behind a kit and you can't really see him, but...
And you've been playing gigs yourself, David? You've been picking up the old guitar?
No, not gigs. Open mic nights.
That's how Dan Lynch started, mate.
I'm not starting, though, am I? I'm winding down.
Okay. And I believe that Douglas Sporterzine has invited you on to Music Manumit to talk about your music.
That was something of a surprise, and I don't know, my response probably wasn't particularly friendly.
Was it fuck off?
Well, not quite, but I mean, it was, what do you mean, talk about my music? You must be making some kind of mistake. You must have mistaken me for somebody else, you know.
Well, it's music is music, isn't it? If only you'd known about that pump dot.
I know.
Wasted 2 hours of your life this morning on that.
I'll probably just give up now.
Believe that. Yeah, just put it in the bin. £20 Sounds, they have a Kickstarter project, but it's slightly delayed, isn't it?
I think they've just taken our money, you know.
Yeah. Did you contribute?
Yeah, I chipped in £5 of Dick Turpin's tax money, yeah.
Okay, it's tax dollars, yeah.
I'm really disappointed. It was due in February, and it's not now, it's nearly August.
Oh, really? What are they trying to do? What's the problem with it?
They're trying to get a live sound. You know, like you said, it can't be that difficult.
Yeah, just...
Just mic it up.
Play a gig and record it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you know, your scouters are like, you know.
I know. Probably got a year's supply of cheap cider, haven't they, or something, you know.
Yeah. Oh, so your gig in a pub was an open mic night. So how many songs do you play? Three or four,
maybe, and then everyone joins in and, you know, makes it sound horrible, so...
Everyone joins in, what, the crowd, you mean?
No. With an open mic night, you've usually got a core of musicians, like a band, you know, a drummer, bass player, guitarist.
Oh, right.
Who are, like, there all the time. And then somebody gets up and they play a song and they join in.
Oh, well, see, I didn't realise that.
Not always. I mean, sometimes it varies from place to place, but usually you have a band because they provide the amps and the stuff to...
Well, I assume that the drums and the kit must be there, but I assume that you could take your guitar there and bass and...
Oh, yeah.
Play your set, yeah.
You can take your own instrument, yeah, right, and you can say, I just want to play by myself, you know, because I'm an antisocial bastard.
Yeah, be a Billy Bragg. Wasn't Glastonbury tedious this year? I can't remember anything of it. Well, Foles were there, weren't they, Luke? Did Foles
play? Yeah, though the bloke's voice seems to have been broken by that point. When I went to see them live in Zurich, they sounded a lot better. But yeah, apart from Foles, who didn't play that great at Glastonbury, I didn't really see that many people I was interested in on the lineup.
No, nor me. So you didn't see the Stones, then?
No, though they weren't broadcasted, were they? Because they told the BBC
to
piss off.
Yeah, they were a bit precious, yeah.
They were broadcast live, weren't they? The Stones? I saw the Stones.
Yeah, I think only a small amount of their actual performance was broadcasted, though.
Maybe not the full set, I don't know, but they played quite a few songs.
Oh, did they? Oh, well, I wouldn't crossroads too much, so it doesn't matter to me.
The new album from The National, Trouble Will Find Me.
Oh, yeah.
What do you guys think of that?
I was completely underwhelmed by it, to be honest, Luke. I know you sent me a pre-release, but...
Yeah, I thought it was quite hard to get into.
I haven't really persevered with it. Maybe I should, but I just found it a bit bleak and depressing and a bit slow and dirgy. Yeah.
Not very sort of memorable moments on the album, I thought.
When you think of, like, Mistaken for Strangers, it's a brilliant pop song, isn't it? A rock song.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like... Joy Division Unknown Pleasures, aren't
they? They did some arty thing as well, didn't they? Not on the album, but didn't they play live Sorrow or something for 24 hours or something like that?
Oh, yeah, that's another thing that turned me off. I thought that was a bit pretentious crap.
And especially to pick such a dreary song to do for 23 hours as well.
Yeah.
We should do a 24-hour tin app, shouldn't we?
I think. <That's it. laughs>
And maybe by the 22nd hour, we'd sort our microphones out.
Yeah.
Oh, this is going well. This is as long as you're recording all this shite, David.
I don't even want to look, really.
You must have been checking. It's still going, eh?
No.
Oh, God.
I had a look at the start.
Okay.
I don't want
to
look.
So now we're moving on to the podcast watch section. We talked about Douglas WH with his Sporterzine, Music Manumit. He's got a legal cast as well, law cast.
Open source playground.
Yeah, he's got an empire, the publishing empire. Yeah. So maybe you shouldn't be so dismissive of him and get on his show. When I listened to Tint, episodes 1 and 2, and I was just as underwhelmed with the choice of podcast title as anything else. I just thought it was like...
We maybe should say, for people who don't know, Tint is short for This Is Not Tin App, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's about American sports and European sports, so it's soccer, baseball, American football, all sorts of sports, so it should be called Sporterzine. He's got the name in front of him, and he's just called it Tint. It's nice to be acknowledged, I guess, and have a hat tip, but I just couldn't quite understand it, really. Initially, I was a bit pissed off, but then I thought, I'm not really pissed off. You know, each their own, do what you want. They did have some minority sports there. In episode 1, I think, they discussed lingerie American football, where they had these big-breasted ladies playing American football, which is quite amusing.
It's a real thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's true, yeah. I thought it was a joke at first.
Yeah.
And then Kevy's discussing shinty, which is like some form of hockey, but with harder sticks.
Harder sticks?
Yeah, you know, harder rods.
What are they made out of?
I don't know. Iron brew, probably. Yeah. But no, it's an interesting contrast because Doug is American, obviously. And Kevy is still... What's his name?
Ivor Cutler.
Ivor Cutler. He's Ivor Cutler. He's just like... And then we went to Inverness and we had grits for tea and I went home to my mammy. He's just like that. He's very easy listening. And Doug is like this full-on yank saying, oh, yeah, fourth down four for the Red Sox, all right.
I don't think he is a yank, is he? I think I upset him there because I asked him if he was a hillbilly.
He's not Canadian, is he?
No, he's not Canadian, but I think he's Southern American, isn't he?
No, is he? Well, a yank has connotations there for the Civil War.
Yank is northeast, isn't
it? Northern American.
Okay. But yeah, Doug, he's more up to date on world soccer than I am. He follows the women's championships, the under-21s, all of it. And I just turn off till, you know, September now. Well, transfer news, sort of. But I'm so bored of that. I just cannot be arsed with it. So yeah, it was nice to have a hat tip, sort of, from Tint. But the other podcast we enjoyed recently, well, not recently, you said it's a few weeks ago now, but was Duffercast with some of our identical friends.
I don't think it is a podcast, is it? Because they've only done one episode.
Well, what do you call it then? A one-off audio cast, I don't know.
Yes, I don't know.
But they've got a website and everything put together with all the bloody profiles and pictures. They must be planning to do another.
I don't know.
I mean, we go months, and so does Sorcel go months between episodes, so why should they be any different? But I enjoyed it because it was like expat Paul, the love bug, Insicus, so I can't really pronounce, some bloke from Yannick, McNanow, and they're all fucking hard to pronounce. Chalkolklom, the guy in Hungary. What made me laugh was some of the quotes in episode one was just hilarious. McNanow is Scottish, and he is to the immortal words, I have electrocuted myself and mains electricity three times, the most recent involved children and an inflatable planetarium. I mean, what can you say to that? And then Lovebug, who is the Yorkshire guy who also produces... Well, the Lovebug podcast, is it? He also uttered, why does one testicle handle over the other two? Which is a classic non-sequitur, just to break up conversation. But then Insicus, he's Belgian or Dutch or something.
I think he's Swedish, actually.
Swedish, is he?
Let's just say foreign.
Foreign, yeah. European, but foreign. He just uttered out of nowhere, some famous people have been accused of cannibalism, and he never backed it up with who they were. He didn't say JFK or Martin Luther King. He just said some famous people. Lady Di. Who did he mean? Who's been accused of cannibalism? And then finally, this is could apply to them themselves. What planet do the fish people come from? It's like Duffercast itself. What planet do they come from?
I suspect there's a bit of sort of old age creeping in there.
Yeah, it was
there?
A bit of the old Duffers, obviously. But I enjoyed it. Yeah. It was very close to Tinap. It was like six lads in a pub having a chat.
Yeah, to be fair, it's probably better than Tinap, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, it probably was, actually, yeah. As I said many times before, it's great to put voices to names that you've seen posting Identica for years.
Yeah. Apart from expat Paul and the Lovebug, who sounded quite similar, they were all quite different, weren't they? Because they all had different accents. They even had a French guy in there, didn't they? Well, I think he's Swiss.
Yeah, Yannick was French,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
And chucking on with a soft Irish accent, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's Northern Irish, isn't he?
Oh, he's harsh Northern Irish, sorry. Right.
McAlew's Scottish. Insius, who's Swedish, I think, so. Or foreign.
And then the TV roundup. One thing I absolutely loved, it's finished now, but there was a BBC documentary about a call centre with a guy called Nebrilshire in Wales. And because I work for Siebel and Oracle, I visit a lot of call centres and I see these poor, depressed students and young people either fielding calls, inbound calls, or making outbound calls trying to sell stuff. And they've got the counters above their head saying, you've made this many calls, we're this many calls behind, you've made this many sales. And it really, really struck with me. And this guy was a bit of a character. He's in Swansea or Cardiff. And when he got a new group in, because they have a huge turnover of staff, they hire and fire people at a drop of a hat, but he had them singing Mr. Brightside by the Killers as part of their induction, and I just thought it was the most fantastic thing ever. And if I go to a client now, I'll say, look, your people look a bit pissed off and demotivated. Let's get him into a room and get Mr. Brightside on. And what he said was, Mr. Brightside by the Killers in C-sharp or whatever it was, to give them the key. And it was just fantastic programme. Lots of characters, very, very funny.
I haven't watched it apart from a couple of trailers. Didn't it remind you of The Office, though?
It was a bit like the real-life Office, because he was speaking cliché, like David Brent, but he was real-life, he's for real. I mean, but the point was, he's no mug, because he's multi-millionaire, and he's had some bad publicity. He's been fined, I think, for outbound calling that shouldn't have been made, but he was quite a character, and he really cared about his staff. He was trying to do matchmaking for his staff. You know, people were single or being dumped. He was trying to, you know, get a girlfriend for, and it was just... He was doing Russian roulette with hard-boiled eggs and soft-boiled eggs. It was just a fantastic programme. and inspirational to anyone who works in a call centre.
If you really cared about his staff, you'd just pay them more, wouldn't you?
I mean, it's all on commission, though, isn't it? It's all sales.
Well, there you go.
There, we come to the close. Well, I don't know.
If only Richard Cutts is on now. Or...
Some of them have made it big. I mean, some of them are doing okay, some not so good.
Yeah.
Is this all of me, rants? Oh, this is outdated.
It looks like all of yours, isn't it? Yeah.
These are my rants, okay?
Are you doing them now, or have you done them already?
I haven't done any of them, yeah. Towards the end of the football season in April and May, I witnessed the split scarf at Old Trafford. Now, it's okay if you're watching Man United play Aston Villa when they've clinched a title to have a split scarf. Well, it isn't really, but I can understand it. But I was seeing split scarves at all sorts of grounds. You know, United v some minor club. Why would you buy a split scarf?
What's a split scarf?
Well, half the scarf has got Man United on it, and the other half has got, you know, Tottenham on it. Yeah, exactly. So why would you buy that unless it's a commemoration event or something special? And the other thing with split scarves is split rounds. You go into a pub and someone buys a round in front of you, and instead of saying, "This is on me, you get the next one," they carve it up and say, "That's £3.48. And they're all chipping in £3.48, and you're waiting to buy your beer.
It's a bit weird.
And they're not students. These are people in employment.
Well, if you're going to do that, why not just buy the drinks individually?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the corollary is playing by debit card for a pint. So a pint might be £4 in London or £3.80, but why would you pay with a debit card?
In Aberystwyth, most pubs don't even have card readers, so...
Well, that's as it should be.
You have to pay with a sheet, do you, or something like that?
Yeah.
And this was something I noticed after ditching Sky in the winter. I had to resume going to the pub to watch football. So for some of the big games, like United, Arsenal in the close season, the pub was absolutely packed, because I live in London and most of the locals in my pub are Arsenal fans, so it was packed and I couldn't get a seat. I was a bit pissed off, standing at the back, squinting over people. I'm quite tall, so I was okay. But what I noticed was that people would just buy a pint and sup it over 2 hours. I would be supping six, and they'd sup one.
Yeah. I mean, really, you should get a better seat, shouldn't you?
Exactly, yeah.
You should be able to book online in advance.
Exactly, reserve seating. And as soon as the final whistle goes, you all scoot out the door. I want to sit and listen to the analysis and have my final pint before going home. They're just... cost the landlord God knows what and just sup a single £4 pint, so please desist.
That's potentially some kind of business opportunity for somebody, isn't it?
Yeah,
to
reserves.
Work out to solve that problem.
And then we got TalkSport, which is really Talk Football, and once the season ends in May, they've got nothing to talk about till September. Last year was good, they had the Olympics, but this year they got fuck all because it's an odd numbered year. If I hear any more speculation or phone calls about Gareth Bale, Cristiano Ronaldo, or now Suarez. God almighty.
I don't know if it was on TalkSport, but I heard somewhere that United were going to sign Leon Osman.
Fellaini, Baines and Osman, yeah.
Well, Fellaini and Baines wouldn't be too bad, I don't think, but Osman, I don't know.
But really, Fellaini? We're linked to Thiago.
Well, okay, I mean, he's not Thiago, is he? He's not Fabregas. But I think, actually, he might be pretty good for United. He's, you know, big and strong, isn't he? He's skillful, he scores goals.
I don't know. Well, we'll see. September. And my final rant was, I was really pleased that Pump came along so we could get rid of that time zone agnostic greeting group.
Just think how many weeks that delayed the migration by all those dents.
What, in TZAG?
People just saying hello, 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 hello.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, some of the people who do it I like and respect and really gets my tits. Just, if you're in Australia, say good morning. I don't care if it's my evening. I won't chastise you or kill you.
It's like my chat with mother complaints, isn't it? It's like, you don't need to say hello, do you? Don't you think on social networking sites, saying hello is unnecessary, and it's just, I don't know.
Well, you say that, I can excuse your mother for saying, hi, David. I can really understand that, because how else do you open up a conversation? Do you just get straight to the brunt of it and say, has that package arrived yet?
I don't know, my wife's back. She's trying to open and close the door very, very quietly.
Well, I think we've about covered it all now anyway. We had a great session with Evan, didn't we?
Yeah, we should do a time zone agnostic
departure,
goodbye,
yeah. Okay, should we wind it up then?
I think so. Anything you want to add, Luke?
Don't think so. I haven't got any rants at the moment.
Okay, it was good, as always.
So I shall get the edit to you next month.
Yeah, any time next month, yeah. Okay, David.
See you later.
Luke.
See you.
Cheers.
Let's hope it recorded.
Bye.
Apologies for the screw-up. I should have had a sound check with Evan, but I didn't realise it would be so problematic.
I've had 4 pints of beer while we recorded that.
You haven't been supping one over the 2 hours.
I'm an alcoholic and I cannot have a drink. Should have a section, because I put fairy lights on my Rolls Royce. And how do you cope with that massive downer?
By putting fairy lights on your car, apparently.
That's really the easiest, right?
Yeah. I keep myself busy by hoovering and mopping the floor and... Are you really excited?
I've been to the toilet about 6 times.
Okay, that's good to know.
Very, very seamlessly, I think. You've done well.
As long as you're not really breathless when you come back and rejoin, like I was.
I've also done it by phone.
Typical Tinnat.
When we're massively famous, we can release a compendium box set.
That's pretty awesome.
That's why we do sound checks.
Maybe we can wait and see how Evan sounds when he comes back again, and then if not, we'll